a word. It's an odd
Blog Talk Radio
way to look at personalities or something bigger than personalities. And we said, there has got to be a better way, a larger way, maybe not even a better way, but a larger way, a richer way to lay a foundation for people that have some interest in the Enneagram. So it's more than a table game, after dinner discussion. You want to pick up from there?
Renee, would it be useful to, for folks who might be listening who don't have any sense of the Enneagram, for us to...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So because what we're offering with the Enneagram is a little distinct, we'll just give you a little snapshot of how most people meet the Enneagram, which is there's a symbol, it's a circle with a triangle and this kind of cool diagonal line that has 9 points on it. And all of that has some rich symbolism, but the way it usually gets introduced is there are 9 types of human beings, 9 main personality styles and points of view on the world. And when we understand our own and other people's, like, the light goes on. That's, you know, when you might see it as a meme on social media, it's more cutesy, like, okay, type one always does this, and, you know, it's playful. And that is a way to meet the Enneagram. It's Enneagram means 9-pointed diagram in Greek. That's what it is. So the map and the diagram represents a lot, but the way it gets used in teaching personality styles, which is the main way people encounter it, is just a map. And when we find our spot on the map and we open to it, all kinds of amazing things can happen. But often people just stop short. They're like, ah, that's my point on the map. You know, I live in that city of humanity, and that's the way I am. That's my culture. That's my identity. And that can explain a lot. It can be kind of helpful to kind of go, oh, yeah, that's the way I do it. It's different than the way other people do it. The way other people do it, it's their prerogative unless it bumps into me, you know, and maybe I can understand it a little better now. That said, Renee and I and many other people who have studied the Enneagram for a long time feel that this is just the tip of the iceberg of what the Enneagram can invite us toward. So that's sort of where we came up with this title for our product, which is, you know, a lot of times, you know, if you banter with somebody, you know, like, what's your horoscope, what's your zodiac sign, or what's your diet, you know, what kind of, you know, it's like a surfacey place. And fine. But what we wanted to offer is beyond what's your type, baby. So even though we're giving an introductory level of orientation, we're trying to give it from a perspective that sets you up best for the richness and the multidimensionality and the potential transformation that the Enneagram leads us toward.
Yeah. Thanks so much. That really kind of, you know, breathes into something that is a little bit larger and a better explanation for why we did this. Because you can. I mean, you can stay with your Enneagram experience by just knowing your type, or knowing your type and knowing other people's types that you live with or work with or engage with. And there's value in that. We would never discourage people from finding value in that. And there's a lot of products out there that do that. They do a really good job at helping people to understand the different points on the diagram and you know, aspects of them. We call them character structures or personality traits, things like that. But when you begin to take a look at something that the Enneagram does that others don't, and I think what we'll do is kind of unpack this before a break and then come back, is why am I doing what I'm doing? What is the motivation behind my behavior, my emotions, and my thoughts? Why am I doing this? What purpose could this serve? What motivates me to do this? You want to talk a little bit about that, Sarah, before we go to break?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite parts about it that starts to open things up for people. It's not just that we're different and we have different styles. There's a kind of sense to it and an underground kind of architecture to it that hangs together. And most of it is based on innocent misperceptions of ourselves in the world when we're little, right? Our personalities start forming when we're little, and we have whatever circumstances we have that we have to cope with, and we get an orientation going on, and we try to keep ourselves safe or loved or somehow manage all the uncertainty in life, and we lock into something, and that becomes invisible to us. It's like the motivation underneath why we do what we do and why how we see the world we do, the way we do is mostly invisible to us, and that's what's one of the first fun layers to uncover when we're looking at the nine types. Is like, what's driving each of these different worldviews? I don't want to launch into an example yet, but we can go there.
Yeah, I think let's use a really simple example. I love this one because, and I'll suggest it, and then we can unpack it even further after a break if we haven't. So if you were to just poll all of your friends and family members and ask them, is it important to you to be a good person, you know, you would get probably an astounding, yeah, of course it's important to be a good person. I mean, why would I not want to be a good person? Is there something that you're missing here? You know, so you poll maybe 50 people in your life and ask them, is it important to be a good person? And you'd probably get an astounding percentage of people, high percentage of people that would say yes. Then we flip the question a bit and we ask, and this is what we'll unpack after break, why is it important for you to be a good person? What motivates you to be a good person? When you kind of examine your inner world and take a gander around, what's motivating you to do that? Why would you want to do that? What inspires you to do that? What would happen if you weren't a good person? So this, I think this is a perfect place to take a break. Let everybody kind of sit and listen to themselves answer those questions, and then we'll come back and take a look at unpacking the motivations for why we do, why we feel, and why we think the way that we do. Be back in a moment.
On the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Tune in each month as Cornelia takes listeners on an odyssey of higher consciousness to inspire, educate, and empower. Cornelia Stephanie is a spiritual teacher, passionate speaker, published author, and founder of the Empower Network. Cornelia guides people on the path of self-healing, peace, and liberation. For more information, go to CorneliaStephanie.com.
Join a global community connecting our hearts with extraterrestrials who only understand unconditional love and inner peace. The Extraterrestrial Trust Revolution, ETR, provides expertise in raising an individual's energy level through a 13-month course and 8 energy portal journeys. Find out more about this 13-month course as well as an entire resource for you to learn about ETR at connectwithets.com.
Did you know that each Enneagram type has a different worldview, different patterns of thinking, feeling, and behaving? They also have essential qualities that are unique to their type. Understanding this helps us develop more tolerance, respect, and appreciation for ourselves and others. Renee Siegel works with individuals, couples, families, and groups using the Enneagram to build better relationships as a tool in addiction recovery. Visit youarepurepotential.com for more info.
Healing has a ripple effect. One person's healing affects everyone around them. This is where the power of sharing our stories can be so important. Tune in to Playing on the Edge Radio with Megan Edge each month on Transformation Talk Radio as Megan provides you with ways of sustaining radical and powerful changes in your life. Enact the power of radical change. To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
I'm Laura Goldstein, and here's a copy with the universe tip. Ever wonder why you want to go to the gym more, for example, but you just can't make it happen? You'll find yourself rearranging your underwear drawer instead of getting in the car. If this sounds like you, you might have caught a case of the shoulds. Maybe you think you should lose 20 pounds to fit back into your favorite pair of jeans, or that you should be healthier in general. It all sounds good, but deep down you just aren't into it. Truth is, making choices from shoulds just leads to guilt, resentment, and a whole lot of procrastination. So take a good look at your goals. Are you shoulding yourself anywhere? If so, give yourself permission to let it go. For more insights like this, tune into my Transformation Talk radio show called Coffee with the Universe. It's a live call-in show. I'd love to support you.
Dr. Pat Show. I am Renee Siegel, your host today. Very grateful to be here with all of you, and I have a wonderful guest today with me, a friend and a colleague, Sarah, who's going to continue the conversation about our Enneagram series that we've developed. And we left to go to break talking about the motivation for why people do what they do, because we can all do similar things. We can all look the same, and unless we scratch the surface and we begin to investigate why we're doing what we're doing, thinking what we're thinking, or feeling what we're feeling, we might just make a lot of assumptions. And when we do ask those questions about motivation, we really begin to see a very different set of responses come up. So let's talk about motivation.
Yeah. So in other personality typologies, you can hear similar things described, right? Like, this person tends to be conscientious, and this type of person tends to be confrontative, and this type of person tends to be meek. But, like, why any of that? Like, in your question about being a good person, let's say that for the most part, everybody's trying to be what they think is the best version of humanity or the best way to go to have a good life or to manage reality as it is. And so why would each person or each style want to be a good person is one way to think about it. Another would be, what do all these different types think is a good person? Like, one type might say, well, it's really good to be constantly on the move and keeping your options open and being busy and going for the best in life. And another would say, to be a good person, you need to be really focused and settled and pay a lot of attention and be deliberate. And we all think that our way of being a good person is like the best way. Even people who act like they're not righteous, like, we all think our way is the best way. And why are these other fools, like, going for other things? It's kind of shocking when you realize that all these other folks have as deep of a motivation as you do, and it may be aimed pretty differently.
Yeah, a lot of passion behind it too, right?
Yeah, deep, because it often has to do with our sense of value, our sense of safety, our sense of control, our sense of basic orientation to life. So being a good person, if you will, is also like just trying to survive and like maybe not get scrutiny or punishment from others or something like that. So if you take, let's say, a good person is somebody who's of service. Yeah, a lot of folks might agree with that in our culture. Some would say that's not their top, but you could have three or four Enneagram types who would all say that, who have different ideas of what service is and different reasons they would think that's a good thing to do or be. For example, you know, type two, you can speak about this if you want, Renee, like, I want to be love. I want to be giving. I want to be, you know, this generous-hearted human. It feels good to me. Other people like it, usually. And I feel, like, powerful in my giving. It feels good, like this positive feedback loop. Another person, let's say type six, might want to be of service because it really creates loyalty and bonds of, you know, that I can count on, that I'm there for other people, and then they're going to be there for me, and everybody will sort of be you know, on the same team, and we'll have each other's backs, and it will make things more secure and safe. Or type one might think, yeah, I need to be of service because that's the good and noble thing to do, that I need to not be selfish, and I need to make sure I put others first because that's right. Can you feel the tone? They're very different strivings and motivations, and each of them is convinced that that's the way to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So I don't know if you had a chance during the break, but thinking about what motivates you or what your style is or how you define a good person is going to be perhaps very different than the people that you live with or the people that you work with or the people that you're friends with. And just understanding that and creating a large enough container in your understanding to hold that there is more than one way to look at that just organically allows tolerance and acceptance and perhaps respect and acknowledgement of other people. So one of the gifts that the Enneagram gives when you begin to do something beyond just identifying what your type is you make a contribution to yourself and to the world, bringing more acceptance and tolerance and respect and acknowledgement of other people. And the world sure needs that right now. It probably always has, but we have some very paramount issues that really demonstrate that we need the ability to include other people's points of view in the way that they see things now.
Probably a lot of folks who listen to Transformation Talk Radio think of themselves as self-aware and compassionate and tolerant and, you know, already there in many ways or looking to be there. Right. And I'd like to say that the Enneagram surprises people. People who've already done a lot of work or self-investigation or think they know themselves pretty well sometimes are stunned by what the Enneagram can help uncover and reveal, not just insights about themselves, but some of these deeper layers about what's driving it all. So that's some of what I love most is the kind of power of the insights and what they potentially set us up for in terms of choice and awareness.
Yeah, that was clearly my experience, and I'm imagining it was probably yours as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So how about taking us on a brief tour of all the types?
Mm, yeah.
Just give everybody a flavor so they can kind of sense into what they might be if they don't know their type or reaffirm their sense of who they are.
They do know their type. So this is going to be the what's your type baby version instead of the beyond what's your type baby version. Okay?
There you go.
This is the sort of stereotypical surface level tour, but because I know these wells, maybe you'll get a little flavor of more than just the bullet points, okay? So I'm going to start with the body types, which you can learn more about in our product, about these three centers of intelligence. We talked first about the 8, 9, and the 1. There's lots of titles for each of these types, depending on the teacher, but often I like to use the number because it gives just that essential feeling. So type 8 is motivated by confronting what's wrong, by going for what matters, for making important things happen, for being powerful, for defending the innocent, and calling BS on things that seem funky, misuses of power. It's a kind of go ahead, call it like it is, what you see is what you get kind of energy. Motivated by truth, by realness, by intensity. Okay, can you feel that energy in yourself, like whether you kind of respond to that or whether it's like, I don't like being around those kind of people. It's always useful when you're hearing the types to think about, you know, can I feel that one on me? All of these types are in all of us. So if you relate to more than one, that's fine, okay? So that's the 8. The 9 is often a moderate, peaceful, seeing all points of view, trying to harmonize relationships or environments to make things flow or smooth or easy and minimize conflict and treat themselves as not particularly important so that everything can be a little smoother out here. So that's a very different energy than the neighbor before it. And likewise, the 1, which is next to that has a different orientation towards the right way to be a self, which is to be good morally, to do the right thing, to work hard, to make it happen in the right way, to be impeccable, to hold the self, to be the ideal, or sometimes to tell other people how they should be the ideal. Okay, so even in those three, can you get a sense that even if they're kind of motivated by a similar aim to make the world better, to be the right kind of self, they have very different tones and vibes motivating them.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to add anything about those three?
Just that in the body center, these eights, nines, and ones, they're motivated in these three flavors that you've done such an incredibly good job at describing, but they're all motivated to manage life strategically through some way of looking at power and control. And it could be very easily misunderstood because, as you described the nine, it doesn't sound like they're trying to create power and control at all. So let's go into that type nine as we end on the body types today and talk about why they don't look like they're trying to manage life with power and control.
Yeah, they might even look kind of passive or neutral or non-control, anti-controlling. What they're doing instead is trying to control themselves so that there isn't disruption or disharmony. So there's a lot of self-containment, a lot of self-management, a lot of even self-dismissal. Self-abnegation is one of the words in the Enneagram. So it's like, if I control this, I can control this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of hidden.
It's a hidden form of control, yeah. Yeah. Wonderful. So we've talked about our body types, eights, nines, and ones, and when we come back from break, we'll go into the other two centers, the heart center and the head center, and the six types that we have not yet discussed. I want to thank you all for listening to the Dr. Pat Show. I am so happy to be the host today for Dr. Pat. I'm Renee Siegel, and please join us after break. Thank you.
With me, Leanne Champion, first Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time on TransformationTalkRadio.com. That new gym membership might help you get fit, but what about emotional fitness? Jump into the rushing waters of personal growth. Don't waste another minute feeling unfulfilled. Visit ChampionYourLife.com and let's do this together.
Hi, I'm Trish Laub from A Cup of Comfort, where we talk about care hero topics that nobody wants to talk about. Here's your care hero tip of the day. As a child, I took dance lessons. I would twirl through the grocery store, leap from aisle to aisle, and dance anywhere I could. One day, while giving my parents their medication, I realized that dance was my medicine. And when I took my medicine, I was more patient and focused, and my emotional and spiritual tank was filled with more of everything I needed to be a better caregiver and daughter to my parents. I realized that self-care was not selfish, but rather self-love, and that it was essential to my ability to be resilient and to recharge and thrive instead of merely survive. So now, when I need to recharge, I turn up the volume and dance it off. What's your medicine? Tune into my show to learn more. See you the second and fourth Tuesday at 12 Pacific, 3 Eastern, here on Transformation Talk Radio. Feel free to reach out to me at info@trishlaub.com.
The truth is funny. This happens. The Cole at Marie Steffen is excited to welcome Karen Benton as a monthly guest host. Tune in on the third Wednesday of each month at 8 a.m. Pacific time to regain confidence and trust in your capacity to create change in your life, your health, your family, and your well-being. Karen Benton is a mother, nurse practitioner, certified body talk practitioner, Franklin Method instructor, and owner of Limitless Living LLC. For more information about Karen, visit KarenBenton.com.
Have you known that you're on a soul path, but often wondered why you don't have the insight of how to go from here to there, or whether or not what you're doing is going to take you to where you want to go in your soul's journey? Damayante is the show for your soul. Damayante speaks to your soul, connects with your soul, and shines a light for your soul. Damayante, the show for your soul with Sarah Main, brings you insights and a pathway to your soul's journey on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Have you ever felt like if you just had the right tools and resources, you'd be able to carve a path toward the life your heart is aching for? Guess what? You have everything you need inside you. I'm Natasha Ognedo, and I'm here to show you that your healing is in your hands. Tune into my show, Unlock the Healing Path, every second and fourth Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. To learn more about me and my work, visit NatashaOgnedo.com.
Welcome back to the Dr. Pat Show. And yes, well, no, I'm not Dr. Pat. I'm Renee Siegel, but I'm really, really happy to be hosting the show today as we continue to talk about the Enneagram and our product, Beyond What's Your Type, Baby. But right now, we're going to move into continued conversation around the other two centers, the heart center types and the body center types. And I'm going to turn it over to Sarah to take you into that understanding. So.
Yeah. So again, we're doing this light duty tour of the types, and you can just pay attention. You know, what lights you up, what seems like familiar to you, what, you know, makes you cringe. These are all important things in starting to figure out your way to find your type. So the heart types are types 2, 3, and 4, and it doesn't mean they're more heartful than every other type, but they have a shared orientation toward how are other people seeing me? Like in relationship, am I being seen according to the image that I'm after? So there's three versions of that, right? The two wants to be seen as loving and giving and kind and helpful and generous and like able to give you what you need. And that has a lot of force to it compared to some other love you might find on the Enneagram. It has a lot of sunbeam energy from most twos. It also is, you know, kind of hoping that it's securing a kind of regard and maybe payback someday for how much I do for you. Maybe you're going to feel like doing it for me. Okay? So it has a transactional quality. And it's very loving and warm and generous generally. Okay? So the image there is I want to be seen as loving and kind and giving. The neighboring type, type 3, wants to be seen as competent, capable, on it, I got this, I'm successful. Whatever domain I'm in, I become the successful version of that. So if I'm in the corporate world, I am super professional and super, you know, achievement-oriented. If I'm, you know, a mother, I'm like uber mom. I'm getting it all done. I'm super streamlined. It's very aimed at the goal and being seen as competent, capable, and successful. So you might see somebody who's a 2 or a 3 with similar behaviors, but what's driving it and what they're after being seen as has a different flavor. And the third heart type is type 4, which is being is very interested in being seen as distinct, exceptional, unique, individual. Nobody like this, you know, like one of a kind. And so that could be in realms of all sorts, whether it's creative realms, which often fours are drawn to, or, you know, professional invention or, but it often has a quality of like, let's do it differently. And I can see things distinctly and uniquely. And so when any of these three heart types are not seen according to their preferred image, it's disturbing, and they'll try harder. They'll be more unique or more successful or more loving because I really need to feel that in order to feel my value.
Mm-hmm.
What would you say
about those three, right?
Yeah, I think I'd like to add something similar to when we were talking about the body types. So we were talking about them being drawn or motivated to be seen in a particular way. And this is also the heart center that we're talking about. So we associate the heart center at least with a portal of knowing through an emotional quality. And we dive into this in much greater detail in the Beyond What's Your Type Baby. But I do want to pay attention to the fact that there's some way of being with emotions that differ between the 2, 3, and 4. So the 2 is very capable of heat sinking into the emotional qualities of other people with a pretty good, clear understanding of how others may be feeling, or at least the willingness to expend attention and energy there. And the 4s are more focused on their own internal experience of emotionality. And then we have this counter type again that sits in the center, which is the 3 when you were talking about the Uber moms or being seen as successful. And they do something very different and don't look like a heart type in that they, it seems like the emotional qualities of life are kind of extracted and set aside so that they can perform, be efficient and productive and be successful. So again, because we're talking about these 3 types within a particular grouping that sits in the heart, the emotional qualities or the way that one may experience the emotional tenor, the heart center, may look very different for 3. Would you like to add anything to that before we move on?
No, that's lovely. I mean, I would say 3s can appear emotional if it's the appropriate successful thing to present. But you're right that the inner experience is usually my true emotions are probably going to get in the way of my performing as the ideal image for whatever I think would be successful.
Yeah, and it's not that they don't have emotions, can't access emotions, but the emotions are accessed not in real time, usually set aside to get the job done, and then, you know, attended to at some later time.
Can we talk about the head types?
Let's do it.
Okay. So the last 3 of the 9 types are called the head types, and they're all orienting in some particular way to try to understand how to function in this life, right? Like, so what is this place, and how do we move in it, and how do we get our needs met? So it's a mental map of principles and what's going to work and how do I ahead of time kind of plan out or expect how things are going to go. And we don't always see that all the time in ourselves when we're these types, but I'll let you follow up with the core emotion here later, Renee. I'll just jump into these types. So the first of those head types is type 5, which is its strategy for trying to understand the world is to kind of step back and observe radically. So to almost remove the self, you can feel my energy coming back here, so I can see the widest possible picture, the most nuanced, the most almost detached point of view would help me feel like I can orient most effectively without getting overwhelmed. Because 5 often feels like there's so much going on in human interactions and stuff that, like, it's much better to try to take it all in through my head, and then I'll be able to orient to it. So it's a inward, upward kind of retraction to try to understand the complexity. Type 6 has a faster-paced mind trying to ferret out the critical path. What are all the ways things could go? What's the worst case possibility? And how do I possibly avert trouble? It's got a mind toward planning to avoid disaster. So that's a, not all 6s would think of themselves that way, but this quality of ferreting out what's not being seen, what potential troubles might be coming our way and how we get ready for them feels like smart, feels safe, feels like I'm going to take the unpredictability of life and get in front of it. And so that that can take a couple paths. We talk about sixes being on a spectrum of phobic and counterphobic, which is a rich topic in itself, but the very shorthand, what's your type, baby version of that is, do I become more careful, cautious, and dutiful to try to avert danger and make sure I'm solid and loyal and obedient? Or do I kind of hate how anxious that makes me and I need to go and confront it, like vigilante, you know, like, okay, it's a scary world, so let's see where the truth is and let's see who I can trust. And most sixes have moments of both, of hanging out one place or the other more. And our final head type is the seven, and that one is taking the uncertainty and mystery of life and thinking, okay, how do I get the best, most, least pain, most pleasure? And I might even be able to do that just through imagining it. Like, maybe I'll make amazing plans, but maybe I'll just have this, you know, like rich mind life of thinking about how it's possible to get the goods and avoid the bads. So you can feel how each of these three strategies are, you know, on the defense against the unpredictability of life and want to orient in a way that will give them safety or something good. But they have very different approaches and motivations and styles in doing so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can feel a difference in the energy. I loved how you moved back and moved forward and fives tend to move back. Sixes can move back and forward.
Mm-hmm.
Sevens are definitely future oriented. They are plunging forward. And this is the portal or the center of intelligence that we're most accustomed to. And that is just taking in information through facts and strategizing and mentalizing. It's kind of how we default in our world in terms of defining how we take in information. But as you can see, we take in information in all three ways, as you've seen, as Sarah has talked about each of the types. So, yeah, there you have it. That's what's your type, baby. Now, when we come back from break, we're going to talk about beyond what's your type, baby. Remember, you are listening to the Dr. Pat Show. I'm Renee Siegel, and I look forward to describing more after we return from break. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, what? You don't need to wait until the new year to set new goals for yourself. Hi, I'm Joan Marlowe, the host of Awareness to Action, and I'm taking this concept to a whole new level. I've developed a program to take your awareness to action in 90 days. Let me introduce you to your day one. Day one can start any day you choose, so why not now? We will use powerful brainstorming, mastermind, visioning, and goal setting techniques to open your awareness of what you really want in your life and take action with intention to get there. Choose to work with me one-on-one or in a small group. Let's connect, lift each other up, and hold each other accountable. I'm offering a free consult to design your program. Visit my site, peacefulhealing.com, to connect with me, and let's find out when your day one will begin.
Did you know that when we talk about the Earth's ecosystems, the most important ecosystem has been left out? You. We created the ecosystem approach to recapture human potential.
Find us at theecosystemapproach.org.
Join us every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time for the Ecosystem Approach Show with Jason and Patricia on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
We remember a time when you could simply form a thought and it would manifest. The harmony was forgotten, but it is returning now. The Power of Inspiration and Awakening Radio with Julia Griffin on TransformationTalkRadio.com each second and fourth Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific will take you on adventures through the heart and spirit, exploring who we once were. These intuitive healers studied under the guidance of wolves, learning from their wisdom to master a higher frequency for a new state of mind. Visit OneTrueSelf.com.
You know, marriage is not always easy, but skills that improve communication go a long way.
Tune in to the Relationship Rehab Show, Recovering Happiness in Your Love with Nancy Landrum and Dr. Pat each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Nancy is an author and teacher empowering couples to create and sustain loving marriages. Learn to listen, speak, and handle conflict with respect so your love can flourish. To learn more about Nancy and her work, visit NancyLandrum.com.
Hey there, I'm Ricky Schwartz from My Turn Life Coaching, Reclaim Your Life. How do you know if you're living your life and not someone else's? Here's one way to find out. First, list out your top five core values. For example, mine are empathy, excellence, passion, service, and core values. Then put those core values into short first-person core value statements. In my case, one, empathy powers my relationships. Two, excellence is the goal in all things I do. Three, passion fuels my perseverance. Four, my value is measured by my service to others. And five, core values drive all of my life decisions. Now ask yourself, am I using my core value statements to drive my personal and professional decisions? Maybe not. Maybe you've never even considered doing so. And that's where life coaching begins. Go to MyTurnLifeCoaching.com and let's put your personal core values into your driver's seat.
Welcome back to the Dr. Pat Show. I am Renee Siegel, the host for today. I welcome you as we do our final segment discussing Beyond What's Your Type, Baby. We've talked about this product that Sarah and I have created. It is a six-part video series. And we've also moved into What's Your Type, Baby, as we've talked a little bit about giving you a Reader's Digest, very condensed version of each of the nine types on the Enneagram. So Sarah and I decided we were going to do this Beyond What's Your Type, Baby, because as you hopefully have gotten a flavor, you might even feel into one of these types, you might feel into more than one of these types. You might recognize that you have some of all of these types. But unpacking why we're doing what we're doing, why we're thinking what we're thinking, and feeling what we're feeling, and creating and cultivating the inner observation that is required for change, awareness is required for change, that's what makes Beyond What Your Type, Baby is it becomes more of a tool, an introductory tool for transformation when we do it this way. So we're going to talk about how what our product is, how it's organized, how you can get the most from it, how to get it, because guess what? You're going to have first access to this as podcast listeners today. We have not broadcast that this product is available. So Sarah, why don't you talk about how we set it up or how to get the most from it?
Yeah. Well, so because it's a video series, you can access it when and where you want. So you can really set the stage for taking it in on a, you know, we've talked about the three centers, the belly, the heart, and the head. This type of teaching we're doing, we're hoping that you'll come to it with your whole self, because we're essentially telling you information, but we're also transmitting the energy and the wisdom that we've been affected by all the years we've been working with it. So it's like show up and listen and learn and you know, orient yourself, but also like drop into this instrument of yourself, because what we're doing with Beyond What's Your Type, Baby is helping you start to feel that you're a lot more than who you take yourself to be. You're a lot more than your traits. You're even a lot more than your motivation. You're a lot more than this personality style. You're a living, amazing, dynamic consciousness and body and heart that's got so much going on. So we hope that in the way we teach it and in the way you participate in it, that you can start to feel that the potential to pay attention with your full self. Like, how is it landing in your body? How is it affecting you emotionally? Where is it going in your mind? How is it making sense or not? So that's my invitation in how to get the most out of it, is to start using more and more of your own capacity and letting what we're bringing light some of that up in you, because we do have habits of attention and behavior and emotion. And one of the real exciting promises of the Enneagram is that we can expand a lot into a lot more of our potential beyond our usual habitual ways of paying attention. Mm-hmm. So let me interrupt you for one second. Why would that make a difference? Why would which part make a difference?
Why would studying any of this make a difference, and why would somebody even want to? I mean, there's so much stuff going on in the world. What would the benefit or the consequence, gift of any of this be?
Totally legitimate question. Like, there's so much out there. There's so much going on. Like, why this? I could do a really long answer to that, but I'll try to be succinct. What the Enneagram could bring you toward is a rich potential of becoming more and more of your, you could call it your authentic self or your higher self or your potential self, through amazing practices and skills that are your innate potential, but mostly in the world are not well supported. So the Enneagram field and most of the teachers in it really understand that these are not easy things to budge. So we really invite people to learn, and in our program we start practices with this, to pay a certain kind of attention, to tune into what's going on in a way that you start to be able to have more choice about some of these things. Now, that might sound fine, good, but really, if you had more awareness and more choice in your life about almost anything and everything, rather than just going with the same old way, I'm talking like this can make really specific changes, but it's a game changer to learn how to use your attention differently, mm-hmm. to not be caught on the usual roller coaster.
Right. Yeah, and I want to just add to that there was a line that was given to us in our training years ago by a common mentor of both of us, Helen Palmer, and she said that if you were to think of the one thing that the Enneagram gives you the opportunity to do, it's to move from your reactive state, this knee-jerk reactivity, to being receptive. And I can't imagine there's anybody that's listening or watching that couldn't benefit from moving from into less reactivity in their life, even if it was internal reactivity, and nobody even noticed, to less reactivity and receptivity to what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
So how's the product organized? Tell everybody a little bit about how we have these six modules and how
it's done. Yeah, so we start with more orientation than some trainings do, because a lot of people want to just jump into your text, but we feel it's really enriching to start with some of the symbolism, the history, especially some attention to the three centers of intelligence, which we feel are foundational, and some orientation to best use of the Enneagram and how to pay attention with awareness practice. So that we feel is something that's distinct about our product compared to just like giving a good description of the types. We're really wanting you to feel how this information can be used toward yours and other people's benefit. And then we talk about application in later modules, and then we have a playful ending where we're playing in the kitchen. You can find out more about that.
So we don't jump into the types per se. Those are in modules 3, 4, and 5. So the first two modules are really set up to foundationally take a look at where is all of this information coming from? How do we disidentify as this essential quality, God-created quality, human being, whatever your belief system is, to this human being that has this personality that's strategically trying to manage life and create some sort of order and pattern and predictability. And then we walk into each one of the types, unpack them. And as we talk about each of the types, we take you into a practice for each type that even if you're not that type, might help you to better experience what it would be like to sit in the energy of that type.
Yeah, how do our folks listening get first access to this awesome product?
Well, you are getting first access to this awesome product. And if you would like to access my website, which is urpurepotential.com, that's the letter U, the letter R, purepotential.com, and leave your information in our contact place. I will forward you access or tell you how to purchase the product. It is a product that you can purchase. There's a lot of really, really great giveaways that are part of the product as well. And we look forward to you joining us. For those people who want to know more, please do. Leave your contact information in at urpurepotential.com. That is the letter U, R, the letter R, purepotential.com. I am your host, Renee Siegel, and I am so grateful to have been sitting in for Dr. Pat today. Thank you so much for being with us, and Sarah.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Tuesday to you. I'm Benny Mathers here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic update for around the town. Well, over on I-5 southbound near Northeast 145th Street, that's in University of Washington, a recent collision partially blocking the right hand of the lane. Good thing, though, its response team has arrived on the scene, and they are taking care of this motorist and the collision. Stay tuned. Coming up next, after the news and weather, it's another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This time, it's Playing on the Edge Radio with Megan Edge. Radical change with E. On the edge of right and wrong.
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. Republicans are slamming the Biden administration on their execution of the U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. Florida Senator Marco Rubio asked the Secretary of State in a hearing why no one saw how quickly the Taliban would take control of the country. Rubio said the U.S. miscalculation about the weakness of Afghan forces and the resilience of the Taliban is unacceptable. President Biden is urging Californians to turn in their ballots to prevent Governor Gavin Newsom from being recalled. While speaking at a rally in Southern California last night, the president added voting no would help the fight against the coronavirus, noting Newsom has had courage to lead during the pandemic. Polling places in California are open for voters to decide if they want to keep Democrat Newsom as governor. The battle over climate change continues as President Biden's recent environmental policy proposals work their way through Congress. Executive Director of the U.S. Climate Action Network, Kaya Chatterjee, details what needs to be done regarding the natural disasters around the country.
At the same time that the South, the North, recover from Ida, and the West is dealing with one of the largest fire seasons in history, the climate front lines are calling for a federal solution that divests from fossil fuels and the things that harm us.
Lawmakers in D.C. continue to mull the latest set of bills ahead of the U.N. Climate Change Conference next month in Glasgow. Clinical trial data for Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine in kids ages 6 months to 5 years may come out next month. CEO Albert Bourla said the data could be released by the end of October. Data concerning the vaccine for children ages 5 to 11 may be released even sooner. In fact, it may be submitted to the FDA in the next few weeks. More Americans are living in poverty. Sarah Bartlett has details.
The U.S. Census Bureau says that number stood at more than 37 million people last year, which is a 1% increase. However, federal stimulus payments given out during the COVID-19 pandemic kept many more out of poverty. Officials credit the checks for keeping just under 12 million people from becoming impoverished.
You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
Bill Wamsley here. The first thing you're going to have to learn is until you stop expecting the politicians or anyone else to change your life isn't going to change. The only person who can change your life is you, but you need to know how. Listen to my show, The Del Wamsley Radio Show, where the hype ends and the help begins.
Tune in every Monday at 8 a.m., Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 5 p.m., and Thursdays at noon right here on KKNW. And let's go ahead and take a look now for Alternative Talk weather outlook for Tuesday. Well, we'll see mostly cloudy skies and a 50% chance of showers today. We'll also see a few sun breaks. High temperatures around 69, 70 degrees. Tonight, clouds and that slight chance of rain will hang around. Low temperatures dropping down to about 54, 53. For Wednesday, clouds and rain to start the day out. Turning to partly sunny skies by Wednesday afternoon. High temperatures around 66. Partly cloudy skies Wednesday night. Lows down to about 48. Partly sunny skies for Thursday. Highs around 65.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat McSilly and Transformation Talk Radio.
Get ready to challenge conventional beliefs about what's possible in creating health, wealth, and happiness. You are listening to Playing on the Edge Radio with Megan Edge. This hit show is providing you with ways of sustaining radical and powerful changes in your life. It is time to open and expand your awareness, accelerate your well-being, as Megan shares wisdom, teachings, and experience from a lifelong journey of the heart. Enact the power of radical change with ease and lift your desires to a new perspective. Now, here's Playing on the Edge Radio.
Yeah, well, everybody, Megan, let's kick it off here. For those of you just tuning in or have not heard Playing on the Edge Radio with Megan Edge, I'm Dr. Pat. I get to sit in a seat here next to Megan as we do these fantastic shows. But one of the things we don't do often enough or, you know, hear from me, I love Megan being part of the Dr. Pat Show Network, but also part of Transformation Network and Transformation Talk Radio. And what I love about this is we don't take enough time usually in these shows to really introduce ourselves. And I want to make sure you know a bit more about who Megan Edge is. Now, what I want to say is I've watched Megan do more incredible things to elevate each of us in many, many ways, whether it's getting a copy of her book and the cards that go with it, the Healing Heart Oracle cards, just looking or working with her, hearing about what she's doing, the circle she's created. But even beyond that, it's when I think about how Megan over time now has become this person that has invited women in for transformation beyond the beyond. And this is a very powerful and much needed body of work today. It is something that for those of you that don't really know who Megan is, you can go to Megan Edge, and it's real simple. It's meganedge.ca. And when you get there, you'll get to meet her. You'll get to think about what she's doing in healing, the heart's journey. You'll get to see how she's expanded her classrooms, but is known for the pivotal confident healer. And one of the things I've learned from Megan in the time we've been together is that we are in the space now where if you are not working with somebody to help you master manifesting, and she offers that class, or an IEM certification, which she may talk about, you know, what I want to say to all of you is the journey that we take now is not one of these journeys we can take alone. We have done that before. Now, I can't speak for men. I can only speak for the fact that Megan and I both work with women in groups. And I am watching women from all walks of life move to levels of accomplishment, even in crisis times. I'm watching them excel and be of service and be so much more. And so this is what I want you all to know about who Megan Edge is, and there's so much more. But today, this is why when we do a show like this that's on the edge of right and wrong, that's today's show, it's important to know who Megan is, what she has fought for, and where we are today in that conversation about being on the edge of right and wrong. Megan, it's so powerful to have this conversation and to be part of a conversation so that we understand the energy that is available to us and what our choices are. Thank you for bringing this great show forward.
Well, thank you for that amazing introduction, Pat.
Wow. I feel very humble. And I was thinking actually this morning how this is our fourth year now of doing the shows together.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful for you, and I'm so grateful for the whole TTR team. And I'm so grateful that I said yes to working with you, that I made the right choice. Which I thought was a really beautiful way to lead into our short show today, as we're looking at right and wrong, and we're looking at it from a personal experience of what does it feel like when you feel that you're right, or when you realize you're wrong, and how does that show up for us, and what does that do for us?
Yeah.
And then we're also going to take it out to the bigger picture and the world at large, and look at some very pivotal right and wrongs that are happening right now in the world, and explore the consequences of, I guess, government bodies or people in leadership deciding for us what is right and what is wrong. And then at what point are we accountable?
Yeah. And I think what you're talking about is, and I love the way you phrased it, and I want to just be clear that Megan and I live in different countries, and yet we have the same idea. And just to clarify for those of you in the U.S., you know, we're going to talk about the right and wrong that you feel inside, and then we're going to talk about how the infrastructure of that, whether we call it government, whether we call it states, whether we call it provinces, right, whether we call it chambers of commerce, or whether we call it parliament, whatever we call it, and I don't actually know what we call, Merkel, this incredible woman. I'm fixated on her. I'm just fixated on the woman, leadership in Germany. I don't know why we don't talk about her more often. I'm not quite sure what her day looks like, but here we are today. And we are looking on the edge of right and wrong.
Yes, absolutely. So let's start with the personal experience of right and wrong. And the question that I want to put to everybody is just to give us a thought. Do you have someone in your life who always needs to be right? Or do you, if you're really honest with yourself, do you always need to be right? Because it can feel really good to be in the right. Right? And I think we all have people in our lives who we realize they just can't be wrong. And it's one thing to decide that your position is really important to you and you want to defend that position, but it's another thing when the need to be right becomes like a psychosis, you know? And there is, in fact, a condition. The condition that I found when I was doing our research was the condition of the fear of being wrong, which is a phobia, psychological condition. But the condition of always needing to be right borders on the megalomaniac spectrum of psychosis, I would say,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. so what do we do with that? You know, how do we deal with somebody in our lives who always needs to be right? I know from my own personal experience, I had someone in my life for a very long time who loved to be right, but more than that, loved to make me wrong.
Yeah.
And that's a tough relationship to be in.
It is. It is. And I love we're talking about this because, for me, I always like to look at who are the people out there. You know, one of the most fascinating studies, and I just want to be clear, we are talking about empirical research, things we found, but there's a really great study about the psychology of morality. And it is a review of the empirical studies that published from about 1940 up until 16 and 70. So, you know, in the world we live in, we call them meta-analysis. Everything is a meta. I'm not quite sure why. The word must mean something. But when somebody goes to the extent, Megan, this is how important this is, and isn't it interesting that this study was done recently, published in 19, and so we're starting to see people look at the conversation of right and wrong. And, you know, and this study in particular is foundational for our conversation today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So are you going to quote it or am I?
what I'm doing is I'm setting the stage for people that listen to say, this is a conversation that we are trying to wrap our minds around in our contemporary world right now.
Yes.
We are trying to wrap our minds around the decisions we make and why we make them and how to be true to ourselves. See, do you see what I'm saying on how to be true to ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's a really important piece. And one of the things that I will say to clients or to students when I'm sharing information or teaching them about different things that I teach on is that I don't need to be right about any of it. And for me, that's a life philosophy. I don't need to be right. I can be wrong, and I'm totally okay with that because I'm not making it personal, whether you agree with me or don't agree with me. I do believe that there'd be a lot less arguments and a lot less fighting in the world if we could agree to disagree when we get to the point in the conversation where we realize we don't have influence over somebody else's ideas or beliefs. But what we often end up doing instead is that we hang our coat our coat of self-esteem on somebody else agreeing with us. And if they don't agree with us, then really there's a part of us that feels like somehow we have been invalidated or unfulfilled.
Yeah.
And I see it all over the place. And I see it now. I mean, it's everywhere.
How are you saying it? Do you mind? Can we, let's take a deeper dive.
Sure.
Into this, because what I love about this is, you know, whether it is an abstract conversation or a conversation on empirical research, you know, one will always agree that no matter how you define this, it's like defining integrity, although integrity is easier to define. You know, when you look at right and wrong, and especially in some of these articles, there's always the Mr. Spock analysis of the greater good. There's always that Spock, you know, I can't remember when he sacrificed his life for the, you know, for the greater good of the numbers or something. But, you know, what we're looking at here is we're looking at the paradoxal and sometimes a dilemma in you as an individual, me as an individual, and let's just call the rest society. I don't know what else to call it. What do you want to call it?
Yeah, society
works. Well, society works
because
community, society, and vantage point. Who's vantage point? And there's a reason we're having this conversation, to be really clear. You know, we are not the only people having a conversation about mandates that have been imposed. And if you're Facebook right now and if you're YouTube right now, we're talking about factual things on the show. So you're not going to hear from us things that are personal. We're talking about data. And the dilemma of data right now is very clear about what happens in any society when there is a thing called an edict or a mandate. There will always be people on multiple sides of a coin.
Yes.
And do we have the right to have an opinion about right or wrong, Megan?
Well, here's the thing. We can look at the data. We can look at facts. And, you know, here's an example. Numbers don't lie. However, people can lie with numbers, right? I mean, a number is an empirical definition of an amount of something. That's what a number is. But did you know that 89.2% of statistics are made up?
Oh, I do know that.
Right? Sounds right.
I got to tell you, not my research. I'll tell you, I had Angela Merkel as my committee chair and the head of the statistics department. So I went through hell to get that data. But it's so easy, though, not to go through that kind of rigor.
And
you know that, right?
That's what we're seeing a lot of. There's a vagueness in information. What I'm seeing is a vagueness in mainstream information that is not being backed up by the data. But then to try to find the data, that's being censored in many cases. So how is a person to find out what is actually being said or what is the study underneath the claim that is being made, the claim that is supporting and holding up a mandate that has an enormous impact both psychologically, emotionally, and economically on people? If the leadership can't demonstrate
where that information is coming from, then how right are they, and what rights do they have to implement response when they're not willing to back up the reason for the response with the information, if they don't have it. I love research. You give me a word, a concept, an idea, and I am down that rabbit hole so fast. I have done an enormous amount of research over the last 18 months, and I found some very interesting things, but I'm not going to be satisfied until I get right down to the original study. What is the original research? What are the original numbers? You know, show me the money. Show me the numbers. Once you have those numbers, once you have those statistics, you have that data, it's easier to my mind to have a conversation that is intelligent and non-emotionally charged, or at least not as emotionally charged, because both people can look at the data and say, okay, so here it is right in front of us. It's neither right nor wrong. It's just there.
Yeah.
And then because we're human and we are emotional creatures, then we will start to have opinions about what that actually means.
Yeah.
But that's okay. I mean, that should be what conversations are all about. It doesn't have to be all about the facts. It can also be about what we think about the facts.
Yeah.
What I'm seeing in the conversation about right and wrong right now is that the division that is happening in countries, communities, families, workplaces, it's just absolutely stunning. To me, the levels to which people are going to show that they are right, that their opinion, their view, their science is right. And now it's getting ugly. And that's unfortunate. Because once it gets ugly, and once it's coming from a need to be right, and once it's coming from a place of fear of being wrong, we can't have a conversation any longer. Not one that would be productive.
And, you know, let's talk about this from a couple of sides of the coin. And let me talk specifics in my country, if I could, for a minute. I want to talk about a couple of things that just are just flat out, this is what's going on. And there's not a judgment on my part about it, because I think part of the conversation, as it does in the study that was put out, they break it down into a couple of parts. They talk about right and wrong as morality and social order. Then they talk about the social anchoring of right and wrong. What does it mean? Meaning, what are the social implications about right or wrong? And then they go on to talk about our self-concept, you know, that, you know, we need to understand ourselves in the evolution of this. But the most important thing that I found in this study was the conversation they had between, believe it or not, thoughts and experiences. This is what we're seeing play out here in this country. Let me give you an example. President Biden makes an announcement about a vaccine mandate. And people are looking at that from many, many different perspectives. But the conversation is, oh, my gosh, that is so like fill in the blank. Then in the United States of America, and I know this is for you, we have the governor of Florida who doesn't agree with that, but again, does a mandate to fine people that impose the vaccine. So on the one hand, you got this body of government saying you must do this. On the other hand, equally right or wrong, is another person using his power to tell people right or wrong in the reverse way. This is like a lose-lose scenario for me. I don't know. I mean, it's not going to stop.
Yeah.
It's not going to stop. If you take the conversation out of the vaccine conversation, and let's flip it to something else, equally right and wrong. One of the greatest, I think if we were to have a right and wrong conversation, you and I have had this before, but let's just talk about it. There's nothing more right or wrong, controversially dialogue, factual or non-factual, legal or not legal, as pro-life versus pro-choice in the United States of America, and the Supreme Court's decision not to hear a case from Texas has now allowed Texas to impose some of the strictest anti-abortion laws, where you can actually earn a living in Texas if you rat on somebody. So right and wrong, let's get to the conversation. You and I are not saying, you know, the conversation about right and wrong, but we're talking about the fact that we can't even have a conversation about this without getting in some kind of trouble. I can't even, you know, somebody said to me, don't bring up Texas, Pat. Don't talk about Texas on your show. And I said, why? They said, because people can actually get paid for hunting you down if you disagree with Governor of Texas. And I'm like, what? So give me your perspective of what's happening where you are.
Well, where I am in Canada, in British Columbia, somebody asked me if we started this show, how are you feeling? I said, well, I'm feeling interesting. Because a few weeks back, our esteemed leaders and leadership announced that vaccine passports were going to be rolled out. And as of Monday, that's yesterday, that is the case. So unless you have been double injected, you are considered not vaccinated. And as such, you get lumped in with all of the anti-vaxxers, and that's anybody who for any reason whatsoever, whether it's medical or religious, or they don't qualify for it, or they simply don't agree that this is the only way that a person can be safe from this virus, then they are considered to be an anti-vaxxer. So we're seeing language around right and wrong with all of this.
Yeah, just like we did in pro-choice, pro-life.
Exactly. And what it comes down to is when we look at right and wrong, then we're really looking at our rights. What do we have the right to expect from leadership and government? What do we have the right to expect from law and legal, the legal industry? What are my rights when I get to a stop sign? Do I have the right to go through a stop sign? No, there's a law that says I have to stop and make sure it's safe. Do I have a right to my body? That should be a no-brainer. And yet, there's Texas. Here's province of British Columbia saying you actually kind of don't. I mean, you do, but not if you wish to go to a restaurant or a bar or play on an adult sports team.
Yeah, or like being out in public.
Being out in public.
Basically we're saying like, okay, so basically what we're saying is you're totally effed if you go out in public and you either wear a mask, don't wear a mask, have a vaccine, don't have a vaccine. And, you know, look,
It's a slippery slope.
I didn't say the F word, Benny. I didn't. I caught myself on that. I was just taking a quote from one of our listeners.
I know. I appreciate it. Thank you.
I got a more graphic text message that came in about it. But we're not talking about any of this. And I want to be really clear for Facebook and YouTube. We're not talking about an opinion about this. We're talking about facts. In the United States of America, Washington State right now, what's going on is everybody's suing everybody. State troopers suing Governor Inslee. The Attorney General is suing Texas. Okay. This morning, I want to just leave you with this. I got a different perspective this morning.
Mm-hmm.
I interviewed Amanda Betancourt. Short interviews. I do these crazy little short interviews, but man, are they jam-packed. Amanda represents the American Association of, I'm going to get it wrong, nurses. And she did a show with me this morning and gave me an interesting perspective that I didn't have about what their journey is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a show about right and wrong. This is not a show about us telling you what's right or wrong.
Mm-hmm.
This is a show about looking at right or wrong. When we come back from break, where do you want to go with this, Megan? Because to me, when we feel like our choice and freedom to choose, and don't get me started on Texas because I'm telling you, Gloria Steinem, where the hell are you, girl?
Yeah,
But when our choice is taken away from us to the point of becoming a criminal, a family member becoming a criminal, even inquiring out of state, making a call to another state, if I find you, I can get a $10,000 reward for you doing that.
Is that right? That feels not right to me.
That is the law in Texas. And I want to be factual when we come back, Facebook mm-hmm. and YouTube. It is the law. My friends, family, some of their family are moving to Texas to make a lot of money, to find a lot of people. And I'm going to tell you something right now. Somewhere, our people of color family are going to rise up. Because this is a population mm-hmm. that is most affected by these severe acts.
Mm-hmm.
And the level of awareness that you all need to have if you live in this state, and boy, let me tell you about the population in Texas. You need to become aware of what's happening. When we come back, Megan's going to take us through the journey on what does it mean to understand that you do have choice. But what if it's not there for you anymore?
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a short break, everybody. We'll be right back.
Are you feeling the complexity of life? Do you feel that urge to step into something greater? Tune in to Nailed It Radio. Find your simplicity within your complexity with me, Life Coach Carrie Nail. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com to discover what it means to use your full power to be the best version of yourself. Imagine stepping into the energy of saying yes to yourself and knowing you've nailed it. For more information about me, visit CarrieNail.com.
Are you ready to invest in your best self? Join Sabrina Wright as she shares tools for creating joy and balance in your life every single day. Sabrina is here to help you become your greatest advocate and empower you to make decisions that will help you live your best life. The Live the Good Life Show, connecting your physical and spiritual self. Every second Thursday at 11 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Find Sabrina at the Wright, W-R-I-G-H-T, balance.com.
Tune in to the show Heart Change Consciousness with me, Dr. Trish DeRocher, as stories of inspired activism come to life. Listening to conversations with your favorite authors, change makers, and many more who practice inspired spiritual activism and transform vulnerabilities into sources of strength. Let's be inspired together through my show Heart Change Consciousness on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Are you ready to branch out? Take a leap of faith. Tune in to Get Rooted Radio with Erica Gifford Mills on TransformationTalkRadio.com to equip, empower, and enlighten yourself. Erica will energize and excite you to power up your passionate dreams that sets your soul on fire. So, get fearlessly ready and get powerfully rooted in your yes to live it up, love it up, and let it go. Visit GetRootedRadio.com.
Sometimes being human has its challenges. Our physical health falters, our spirits sag, our dreams don't immediately come to fruition. Welcome to the power of Maximum Medicine Radio. Join me, Doc Martin, in conversations that will blow your mind about healing. In our hit show, Doc Martin addresses the scientific with bridging to the mystical approaches to give you a new narrative about maximum medicine. In this live call-in show, we will journey into the extraordinary genius of the human body and talk about other beliefs that impact being your multidimensional self. We seek the seen and the unseen and explore the earthbound and the otherworldly, all with the purpose of calling forth the maximum you. To learn more about Doc Martin and Maximum Medicine, visit www.SharonMartinMD.com.
Thank you.
everybody, welcome back. Welcome back. I want to make sure for all of you know that when I'm talking about information on Dr. Pat, when I'm talking about information, let me tell you exactly where you can go to find it. And there are several studies, but the one I quoted earlier in the show, and Jamie, perhaps when you do the edit on this, I'd like you to put this citation up. It is the Psychology of Morality Review Analysis Empirical Studies published in the SAGE Journal. And SAGE is a social, I think I'm even published in SAGE, but you can go and you can find this in journals.sagepub.com. It is a article posted in January 18th of 2019. It is a very thorough article. I'm sure everybody can get to it. I want to also say that my other reference, which I'll probably reference during this segment, is also from, and this is important to know, it's also from Critical Care Nurses. This is from Amanda Betancourt, the AACN President-elect and Associate Professor, Department of Family and Community Health. I also want to tell you that this information that we're about to talk about is documented, and you will be able to find it on Hear Us Out or some of the other sites we'll mention, because we are going to talk data now. But more than that, we're going to talk the freedom to choose, Megan, aren't we? And MeganEdge.ca, get a hold of Megan. All right, Megan.
Get a hold of me.
It's your turn now.
I will ask, if you do get a hold of me, be respectful, please.
I'm not
really interested in having people yell at me or slander me or call me names or any of that sort of stuff. I will not respond to any of that.
I'm kind of used to it, although I love when our listeners correct me about things, and just like the text message I got that I share part of it. You know, I love that they go to Transformation Talk Radio. I mean, my gosh, if you looked in the back end and saw some of the feedback and questions, amazing questions from our listeners, I'm so glad we can provide a forum to have this conversation. So give me your sense. Give me the Megan Edge State of the Union in this conversation of being on the edge of right and wrong.
Okay. Well, as it relates to something very poignant and important right now in our lives, which is policies and the ways in which government and leadership are mandating behavior in order to stop the spread of a virus. Okay. So one of the things I said earlier, I love numbers. I got really curious when this whole thing started. What were the numbers? What was the percentage of people immediately impacted by this virus compared to the population of an area? Because that's how you get that statistic. It's a very simple mathematical equation. You divide the population by the number of people affected. And here we are 18 months later, and I want to share this with you. And these numbers come from the CDC website. They come from the BC CDC website. So this is the British Columbia CDC website, okay, Center for Disease Control. These are as vetted numbers as you could possibly get. They're also not the easiest numbers to find when you go to their websites. And we'll just let that hang for a moment. But here's where we are right now. So as of August 21st, 2021, the population of British Columbia is 5,170,000 people. Okay. And there have been a total of 1,804 deaths due to or related to COVID-19. The calculation demonstrates that this affects or represents 0.023% of the population. I've done the math as well, and I've gotten numbers as low as 0.00036% of the population. This is a simple, straightforward calculation. You can't make these numbers up. You go to your calculator and you put the numbers in. So when I see that, and I want to be very clear about something here in the whole conversation about right and wrong, I am not for one moment saying that there has not been a virus, SARS-CoV-2 influenza. That's what it's called. That's the data on it. And I'm not saying that it hasn't had an enormous impact, because it absolutely has. What I am interested in is, why has that impact been so egregious when you look at this data for BC? I'm only speaking about British Columbia right now, although I have done, I've crunched the numbers for the whole, my country, every province in my country. The response from leadership is not equal to the risk
demonstrated by this analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Anywhere across the board, I've done the numbers for the whole world, and the numbers are virtually the same. Less than one half of 1% of the population. So with that in mind, and it's interesting to me. These are just numbers, except that government and leadership are giving us numbers and not citing the source. I'm citing the source. I'm telling you where these numbers come from. I'm not making this up. Okay. The next question where I go then is, so then why is everything seemingly out of control? We're being told, and we're being told this by government, these injections are the only way. But is that right? Because it's not what I've learned when I've done my research looking at peer-reviewed, gold standard, meta, whatever you want to call it, studies into mainstream medicines that are very effective by all the tests and studies that have been done at preventing, treating, and healing from this particular virus. And here's where Facebook and YouTube, you're censoring your list of what we can and cannot say, what you have considered to be right and not right or wrong, does not allow for that conversation to happen. Why?
Yeah, I mean, this is the question. Let me tell you where I think this goes, and I'm going to skip to a different scenario, but it is the same idea. I'm not going to be able to talk about the right to choose on these social media platforms because now we have in the United States government laws being implemented. Am I not going to be able to have a conversation about what is happening and how to get people help? When a woman is raped in the state of Texas, and check the rape numbers for the state of Texas, everybody, please go to the website that you can get the abuse stuff and the family. Please go to the website. I'll find it by the end of the show. But when you are now saying to somebody that you have just been raped in the state of Texas, and if you dare make a phone call, whether it be in the state or out of the state, there could be a bounty for you. In my lifetime, this whole idea of taking one's freedom to choose what we do with our bodies is so more than a COVID conversation right now for me. It is so Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
And it is so affecting the people of color in the United States of America. And I'm asking myself, Black lives better speak up and help us understand that Black lives matter. Because do the math. Look at the populations affected by this. You and I, we are sitting here as white women, although I did find out a little bit about my heritage, so I'm still trying to work out that whole Brazilian grandfather thing. And I don't know what to do to help these, to help people. When I was 20, I knew what to do.
Mm-hmm.
I knew what we were doing. I knew we were on the streets every weekend. And I'll tell you, social media has made us lazy as women and uneducated about the rights that we've already lost in the United States. Let me be clear. This is factual. In the United States of America, 2 months ago, women, if you're not furious about this for yourself or your child, please fact check me. The Congress passed a bill that would have given women the ability to have equal pay. The Senate not just voted it down, but it went through the Senate like a whisper. And why are we not as women enraged? It went by so quickly to deny women the right to equal pay. Can you see the thread here, Megan? Can you see what's happening in the thread?
Well, absolutely. And I've seen it for a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
There is a bigger picture that is happening here.
Mm-hmm.
And there is really no way to have this conversation without there being some personal input in it. I mean, we can talk facts and data until we're blue in the face, but the reality is that lives are impacted by policy that is being made based on data, whether it is good, bad, or neutral.
Mm-hmm.
For me, when you ask the question, you know, what do we do about this? How do we integrate this? How do we deal with this? How do we look at this horrific experience and say, how did this even happen? How is
it? Yeah, I'm trying to ask that.
who let this happen? This is what I mean by it's a slippery slope.
How could you not give women equal pay? I can't even like. Jessica's like, oh, here she goes again with that story on the equal pay.
It's important, though, because let's go back to the initial question about right and wrong, on the edge of right or wrong.
Yeah.
You know, you can say it's black and white. It's either right or it's wrong. But no, because there's ethics and morality that come into it.
Yeah.
Right? There's personal experience. There's personal opinion. There's fear, and there's the trigger that comes from that fear that is where the behavior comes from or where the belief comes from.
Yes.
So maybe in Texas there were women involved in the implementation of this particular law, and maybe they have a very strong moral compass based on a religious belief or a moral belief about abortion mm-hmm. and lives and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, but I'm going to go out on a limb here, and you know, maybe the fact checkers can check this out for me, but I'm pretty sure that most of the people making those laws and policies are white, older white men.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, let's talk about a law and then a law. There's a law that Texas could have implemented that would have been enough to appeal to the Texas body population, most Texans. There would have been a simple law that the governor could have imposed. But it went so far beyond that. It went to the point of not only can you not do this here, but you can't even call somebody for help about it. You can't even get information about it. And, you know, I mean, look this up. You know, a $10,000 bounty, where are they getting the budget for that from? You know, it went so extreme. You can't even telehealth call.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we need to get educated and aware. So all I'm trying to say is this is not a show about whether this political decision is right or this is wrong. For me, please, all of us, men and women alike, let's get informed. Because if we're not informed, if we're not looking and getting ourselves informed in order to make these decisions. And I have a friend in Texas who didn't know anything about this. And she is shocked, lives in Texas, works with women. And so for me and this show today, on the edge of right or wrong, every one of us has to look at it. I want to give you a flip scenario, because let's see if we have 10 minutes left, and I want to go to the flip scenario. Because I've got a couple of text messages here. The flip scenario is I can't operate in my world because they won't get vaccinated. Now, that is real. See, there are different perspectives that go on. You know, my freedom is being limited in the way I live my life because I'm playing Russian roulette in the public. The nurse's perspective this morning were more factual and more seriously warning. And so let's talk about them. They are looking at the surge. They've got numbers. More than 98% of the people in their hospitals are unvaccinated. This is their, the nurses. This is dedicated, and they're saying healthy young people are dying from COVID, and they gave numbers. 1 in 3 of the survivors will suffer debilitating neurological and respiratory symptoms. They gave websites. Everything is available. This was a 10-minute interview. And yet, this is a cry from the nurses in the United States of America to say, you haven't listened to us and helped us and supported us. You haven't given us any way to relieve our stress. You just haven't done it. And if you're not going to do something like that, how are you going to support us as a body of professionals so we're not burning out beyond the point of taking care of people that don't have COVID? This was their cry this morning on the edge of right and wrong.
So at what point, out of curiosity, does a person's experience become the normative narrative for right or wrong?
That's why we're doing the show. I mean, right? Look at that article. You know, the article doesn't give a definition. They give you scenarios. Mm-hmm. Isn't that what we're doing today?
Yes, and also we're playing with numbers.
We have to play
with
numbers.
Playing with fire, right?
We have to play with numbers today.
Yeah, we do have to play with numbers. So here are some other numbers that are really important to the conversation if we're going to come back to mm-hmm. those who have chosen the injection and those who are choosing to or should not get the injections. There is an enormous body of evidence. There's an enormous body of work. You can go to the Pfizer website. You can go to the Moderna website. You can yeah. see the list of side effects. Known risks. You can see where they say very implicitly, this is not a magic bullet. I mean, the media is telling us this is a magic bullet, and the marketing is telling us this is a magic bullet. But there are, and I don't have a number, so I'm just going to say this is what I've heard, but I don't have a source for it at my fingertips. There are breakthrough cases in those who have been double vaxxed, who are still getting it, because a vaccine is not meant to prevent. A vaccine is meant to mitigate. Mm-hmm. It's meant to lower the severity of the symptoms. Even these vaccines, even though these are vaccines that have never been put into human beings before, that's a fact. Even though these are still a trial, this is still an experimental medical treatment, that's also a fact. So to say, this is the wording up here. The wording up here is that it is a plague of the unvaccinated.
The wording in Canada, when you say
it. Wording in Canada.
Thank you.
This is a plague of the unvaccinated. What? That's not how viruses work. Like, this is where I just keep coming back to when you do your research. Because originally I was saying to people, just do your research. But then I realized that doesn't go far enough. Because if you only do your research on the first page that pops up on Google, you're not actually getting all the perspective and all the research that's being done.
Yeah.
You're just not.
Yeah. Let me give you a real scenario to your point. And this is real. Went to my doctor. Now, I'm one of these people that I have multiple things that I do for my physical health that are required. Some of the treatments would make most people cringe. Right? I am healthy, but here's what happens. I made a decision not to go get those treatments for a lot of reasons. But I did get vaccinated for a lot of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went back to get these treatments and I talked to my doctor, I said, hey, what can we do? I need them. Haven't gotten them in a year. I'm feeling great. No, not a good idea, because what we've discovered, now I just tell on social media, this is true. This is a fact. I'm sharing my personal doctor story. No, not a good idea, because here's what we think we're finding. Here's what we think we're finding. People seen and then got this treatment, it seems, and this makes total science sense, by the way, it seems like if you get the vaccine and you get the treatment, they neutralize each other. And so people that have gotten the treatments I get, which are millions of them in the United States, this particular treatment or any treatment thereof like this treatment I get, millions of you, and then you vaccinated thinking you're okay with the vaccination, that was news to me about 2 weeks ago. And I'm so glad I didn't get the treatment, but, you know, I don't know. So you see what you're saying is so critically important. We need to ask questions. We need to find the information. You're not going to find this information, what I just shared. This is like what they're finding.
So you can find the information, though. And this is what I stood up in front of 2,000 people at a rally on September the 1st here in Victoria of business owners, for the most part, but also nurses and firefighters and doctors and the average individual person. There were over 2,000 of us in front of the legislature lawn here in my city, my home city. And I stood up in front of all of them and I said, you have choice. You have health choices still. Now, in Canada, there's a medication that has been used all around the world, and I'm just going to go quick on this one, but there's so much information on it. Been used all around the world for the last 40 years in people. And it's a very effective treatment as a preventative and as a treatment, even when someone is in the ICU, to deal with COVID. It is saving lives. But here in Canada, we can't get it. Here in Canada, anyone who talks about it is told how wrong they are. This is only a horse dewormer medication, and it's really, really bad for people. Really? Because the facts that I have found, the research that I have done, says very, very differently. It says that the man who discovered this won the Nobel Prize in 2015 for medicine for this particular medication, that billions of doses have been administered around the world, that Merck, one of the big pharma companies, it holds it can't be patented because it's a naturally occurring bacteria that is the basis of this medication, but they hold the creative process for it. And it is being denied. That nurse that you interviewed today, I wonder if she knows about this medication, because it is being used in the United States. It's being used in many, many hospitals because of how effective it is. If she knew about it, she could give it to those patients. And they would get better. And the science is there, and the numbers are there, and the data is there, and there are hundreds of studies. When I went to PubMed, and so PubMed is in the U.S., it's a body where people can bring in peer-reviewed research. That's where I go to get a lot of my information. The first page of PubMed, if you look up this medication, whose name we cannot say, by the way, it's been censored. It's on the list of words we're not allowed to
say. You
can't say it.
Mm-mm.
Ridiculous, but you can't say it. On the first page, 10 research articles pop up looking at specifically the effect, the antiviral effects that this medication now, we understand now, has on specifically this virus that we're talking about. It is saving lives. Now, is it right that we can't know that? Is it right that I've had people yell at me and tell me what an idiot I am, that I'm proposing that this medication that's been around for 40 years is more than horse medicine and is saving lives, that I'm being, and now this is going to be somewhat of an emotional response, but I'm being blacklisted out of my family. Our social media platforms are saying we can't talk about it, but there are high caliber doctors who are like the top of their field, virologists and immunologists, who are trying to get the word out, have been for over a year.
Yeah.
Right? So the debate of right or wrong, it's not one we're going to cover or completely solve in the next 3 years.
But I want to make an announcement, though. I want to say to you in the United States or globally, you're going to find a conversation on what we're talking about in Forbes magazine. You'll be able to see it. You'll be able to look at the magazines in The Advocate and other places about this now. And so you'll be able to start to see bigger conversations by people that are talking about solutions And what I would say is you just Google them. That's all I can say. If you can Google these articles for alternative, you know, what they're finding in the science of treating COVID-19, you can Google that.
So the website for PubMed, just for anybody who's curious, the name of the homepage website is, I'm just trying to find it here. Hang on a second.
And by the way, you can go on YouTube and there's research on these drugs that are being, or solutions that are being listed. So everything Megan and I talked about today can be found.
Absolutely can.
Yeah.
So it's PubMed, PubMed.nlm.nih.gov.
Okay. And for those of you out there, look, this is the conversation that you're having at your dinner tables. This is the judgment you're making, that we're making, about what is right and what is wrong. And whether or not we believe in it, there are implications and interplay between what we think and what we experience. And the article that I mentioned for you to go look if you want to is The Psychology of Morality, a review and analysis of empirical studies published from 1940 to 2017. I wonder why the authors of this particular article now felt this was important.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not...